Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Come on in and sit a while. Relax. Put your feet up while we tell you a story. Today's show is based on a short tale by Alice Duer Miller called The Burglar and Blizzard, first published in 1914. We hope you enjoy the first part of our Christmas special brought to you by the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater and KBI Radio. The second part of The Burglar and the Blizzard will be aired next week at the same time here on KBIA. Our story begins 2 days before Christmas, as Jeffrey Holland, a young millionaire bachelor who made his fortune from mining operations in Mexico, surveys a plush restaurant in New York City. As he looks over the diners, his presence attracts the attention of a middle-aged couple sitting nearby. At that moment, a waiter touches Jeffrey's shoulder.
Mr. and Mrs. Vaughn have come, sir.
Thank you. Please send word up to my apartment and tell Miss May that we are sitting down to dinner.
I'm afraid we are late, Jeffrey. But can you blame us? Have you heard? We have been telegraphing Hillsborough all afternoon to find out what has been taken.
You are not late. My sister has not come down yet. I have not had time to read the newspaper. What is going on in Hillsborough?
Let's take our seats and we will fill you in.
We have just been reading about the robberies.
What? Robberies in Hillsborough?
Good heavens, man, you have been out of touch. I have the paper right here. Listen to this. The headline reads, Millionaire's Summer Homes Looted.
Oh, anyone we know?
Apparently we are the latest victims. According to the paper, yesterday, December 21st, our vacation house was the fourth in a series of daring robberies in the Hillsborough area. The paper says, the residence of C.B. Vaughn of New York was entered, and vintage wines and other valuables were removed. Apparently the culprit did not take many things. Only objects of the greatest value were stolen. Well, at least the burglar has good taste.
What other homes have been raided?
Let's see. The Marheim silver has been looted, but it was found yesterday with a dealer in Boston. The dealer could not identify the person from whom he bought them, except to say that she was a young lady.
Is your sister going to join us?
Yes. What was stolen from your house?
A Van Dyke etching and some paintings. And Charlie feels terrible about losing the wine collection.
Yes, I tell you, we were going to have a grand time with that champagne.
Upon my word. Several robberies and not so much as a clue.
Apparently not. At least there was no mention of it in this article.
You need not be concerned, Jeffrey. In spite of all your treasures, I don't believe any thief would take the trouble to climb to the top of your mountain.
I can only hope that the thief is a poor pedestrian and does not want to walk that far. Shouldn't you be starting for Hillsborough at once to assess the damage?
Pooh, I can't go with the market in this condition. I could lose more than the whole house is worth. The thing to do is offer a reward, a big enough reward to attract some first-class detective.
All right, I'll pitch in. Our fellow Hillsboroughites should be able to raise at least 5,000. Is that enough? We can have it in the paper tomorrow. What shall I say? Do you think $5,000 reward will be sufficient?
Ah, there is Mrs. May. So glad you could join us. We were just discussing the Hillsborough robberies with your brother.
Oh, yes. Isn't it just delicious? It's the most exciting thing to happen in Hillsborough since the post office burned.
Now, dear sister, it is nothing to make light of. The Vaughns are the latest victims.
Oh, well, dears, you can afford a little theft, can't you? For my part, I have the greatest respect and admiration for the robber. Do you know he could not find anything worth taking at the Wilsons? The Wilsons make a great to-do about the house being invaded and believe he must have been scared away, no doubt frightened by the hideousness of their possessions. Those woolly paintings on wood and the black satin parasol that turns out to be an umbrella stand.
My dear Florence, how can a black satin parasol be mistaken for an umbrella stand?
Exactly, Jeff. How can it? That is what people say every time they visit the Wilsons' house. How can it be? The waste paper baskets resemble tree trunks, and the end tables look like cargo boxes. Nothing in the house is really what it looks like, except the beds. Someone who stayed there told me it felt like they were sleeping on an array of old bottles covered in burlap. No, indeed, the best is all he cares about. honestly, Jane, haven't you an admiration for a man of so much taste and ability? Just think, he has entered 4 houses and there's not the slightest trace of him.
Oh, there must be traces of him. Remember the snowstorm in the early part of the month. There must have been footsteps, if nothing else.
Of course, you're right, Jeffrey. That would seem to indicate that the watchmen are in on it.
No one would take our watchman into any such conspiracy. He is 1,002 years old and feeble for his age. No, this is a lone genius, a slim, dark figure in a slouch hat. That is the way I imagine him. Do you really suppose that a watchman would take 6 pair of Mrs. Marheim's best linen sheets?
Charlie, what do you make of that young woman who disposed of the Marheim silver in Boston?
According to the reports, she was quite a fetching lass.
She is, of course, his lady love. No doubt a lady of high social position. He is just waiting to make one more grand coup, rob the bank or something, and then the world will be startled by the news of their elopement. They'll go and live somewhere luxuriously in the South Pacific. Perhaps, though, he'll turn pirate, sailing the high seas. That would be so romantic.
I hope he won't rob the Hillsborough Bank, for I keep quite a bit of money there. Florence, you are beginning to make me nervous.
That is the comfort of being practically destitute. I don't have enough money to worry about. Who would take the trouble to rifle my humble abode when Jeffrey's palace is just up the hill?
Practically destitute? I'm sorry I spent so much time choosing your Christmas present a year ago.
Well, of course, Jeff, dear, that wonderful old silver is valuable, but it's put away where no burglar could find it. There is only my sable coat, and I'm going to send for that as soon as I can find time.
In my opinion, the man is no longer in the neighborhood. He would not dare make a fifth attempt while the whole countryside is searching for him. Hillsborough has always been an attractive place to thieves. It is such an easy place to get away from. With 3 railroads running through town, anyone could easily catch a passing freight train and just disappear.
I don't suppose he will ever be caught. When he's got all he wants, he'll simply melt away and be forgotten. If he were caught...
Here is a telegram for you, Mrs. May.
Why, who could be sending me a telegram? I hope Jack's not bothering me again with some silly trifle. Oh my.
What is it, Florence?
Well, this is absurd. It can't be.
What does it say?
It says my house was broken into about 5 o'clock this afternoon, and my silver tea set and sable coat are missing.
The very next evening, Holland stepped off the train at the Hillsborough station. He wore a long fur coat because the snow was thickly falling in small, close flakes, and a biting wind was blowing. It looked like a blizzard might be brewing. By the time Jeffrey arrived at his house, he was surprised at how much snow had already fallen. The prospect of being snowed in now seemed more and more likely. As he approached the windows to the library, a faint but distinct noise could be heard from inside. Instinctively, he felt for the revolver in his coat pocket. Plowing through the drifts to his back door, he unlocked it without a sound and slipped inside. A patch of white light streamed out of the library door. He tiptoed to the library and saw a man holding a book, pacing slowly back and forth. The man was reading so intently that Jeffrey could not resist, making a dramatic entrance. He crept up behind the man, revolver in hand, and said softly,
"Fond of reading?"
"Huh? What?"
"Don't try it. Don't even think about it. Stand with your face to the wall and your hands up. I'd just as soon shoot you as look at you."
"Oh, don't be silly. I can't stand there with my hands over my head all night."
"You'll stand there until I'm ready for you to move."
"And when will that be?"
"After I have a chance to use a telephone to call the authorities."
"I always cut the telephone wires before I enter a house."
Oh, all right. In that case, you might as well sit down. It looks like we may be here until morning. The snow is piling up quickly.
Oh, thank you. There's no reason for us to be antagonistic about all this. Do you mind if I continue reading my book? It is Tristram Shandy, and I was completely absorbed when you interrupted.
Interrupted? You were trying to rob my house. You brigand?
Now, there's no need for theatrics. You don't remember me, do you?
Remember you?
Yes, we were in school together for a time.
Yes, you do look familiar. You used to be able to wag your ears.
Still can, see?
Why, you are Skinny McVeigh.
In the flesh. Ah, those were wonderful days. Do you remember the time that Johnny Gordon went
We are not here to reminisce. But I don't remember you ever stealing anything. You were honest enough then, weren't you?
Oh, yes. Would have never dreamed of taking something that was not mine. I took up this profession just a month or so ago.
Well, I would not call burglary a profession. Just because I knew you in your youth does not change the situation. Remember, I still have a gun on you, and will not hesitate to shoot you if you give me the slightest provocation.
Yes, well, I suppose that is reasonable under the circumstances. You know, I'm not really a bad sort. Since our school days, I've tried many different things.
Well, I don't want to hear about them.
All right. May I continue with my book? I had no idea that Tristram Shandy was so captivating. Ah, there was a man. Something of my own type, too, it seems to me. Ordinary standards meant nothing to him. He was too original, saw life from another standpoint.
Sit down.
Oh, I am sorry. I meant nothing by it. Only, I talk better on my feet.
All the more reason for you to sit down, then. You won't talk at all if I shoot you.
Yes, yes, I'm sitting. My, you seem testy this evening. I don't remember you being that way at all when we were in school.
Testy? Are you serious? Need I remind you that I caught you in the act of robbing me?
Yes, there's no denying it. But, Holland, you must understand that if I had known it was your place, I would have crossed it off my list. It is against my principles to burgle old school chums.
And you must understand that I have an aversion to people with sticky fingers.
You would probably be surprised if you knew the number of things I can do with my fingers. I'm really quite proficient in anything that involves my hands.
That's nice. There should be plenty of opportunity to work with your hands in the penitentiary.
Oh, yes, of course. The penitentiary. Good one. there are some wonderful people in the penitentiary. I see you don't quite get that. You are hemmed in by conventional standards and your possessions.
I don't attach much importance to possessions that I steal them from other people.
Oh, Philistine, Holland. Philistine. Doesn't anyone who has anything steal from someone? Why, of course. But I see you don't get the point. My sister is just the same way. Sweet girl, witty in her own way, but Philistine. It would be impossible for me to even mention these ideas to her.
I wonder how much of this rubbish you really believe.
I wonder myself, Holland. Still, it is undeniably amusing, and the main thing is that I enjoy life. Fate has dealt me some sad, but often interesting situations. Why, look at the coincidence of you turning up tonight, of all nights, on Christmas Eve.
It was scarcely a coincidence.
I know. But still, it was quite a strange coincidence with me robbing your house and you showing up as you did. It is a joy to visit with an old acquaintance on Christmas Eve.
Now look!
Yet there's one thing marring my joy, something preying on my mind. I am seriously worried about my sister. It may be a matter of life and death. You will have to let me go for an hour or thereabouts so I can go get her.
Let you do what?
Get my sister. She's living in a little hut in the woods, and I am actually afraid she will be snowed in.
It seems highly probable, the way it is snowing.
Well, then I must go and get her.
Have you completely lost your mind?
Maybe I have, but that is not the point. Think of a girl, Holland, alone, all night, in such a storm. Now, I put it to you. Would you leave your sister stranded in conditions such as this?
Well, I...
There, you see? The place is drafty, too. Do you remember the cabin at all? The little shack in the woods where we used to play? You would be surprised to see how nicely I've fixed it up.
No doubt I would.
It is surprisingly livable, but it is drafty. The truth is, I ought to have gone south, but I could not foresee this blizzard. If you have no objection, I'll go and bring her back here.
If you value your life, you won't move from that chair.
Oh, damn it, Holland. Don't be so obtuse. It's cold in this house. Think how it must be in that shanty.
Very unpleasant, I should think.
More than that. More than that. She is suffering, I have no doubt. Why, she might freeze to death. Her life is endangered. Don't you see that? Have a heart, man.
Yes, I understand. But you should have thought of that before you left to go burglarizing in a blizzard.
Thought of it? Well, of course I thought of it. But I had no idea that I would be caught or that this storm would become so severe.
Still, that is not my problem.
Now, you know you will feel terrible tomorrow if anything happens to her, especially if you knew there might have been things you could have done to prevent it.
Prevent it? You expect me to turn you loose for the sake of a story no sane man would believe?
Well, perhaps there is another way. You could go yourself.
Yes, I could, if I was a complete idiot.
Well, then I think you ought to be getting along.
What? I? Upon my word, McVeigh, you are something of a humorist, aren't you?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Well, I often find myself to be an unwitting source of merriment to others, but I don't mind. If you're cheerful yourself, you make other people so. It must be a jolly thing for men in prison to have an innocent come in with an entertaining and new point of view.
I'm sure you will be a valuable addition to prison life. It's an ill wind, you know.
It's an ill wind for my sister, literally. Come, Holland, you can trust me. Please, be on your way.
Why? What do you take me for, McVeigh? Do you really suppose that I'm going out in this storm so you can escape?
I would give you my word of honor to stay here until you come back.
Your what?
Come now, Holland, be humane. Oh, please, I will do anything you like. Suppose you locked me in a closet.
Look, I'll tell you what I will do. After I get you safely in jail tomorrow, I'll go check the hut to ensure...
It may be too late, then.
Yes, it may.
Before we continue with our story, let's take a moment to tell you about a way that you can help us at Maplewood Barn. Have you or a member of your family ever attended one of the shows or acted or helped out with a Maplewood performance? Well, we're researching a book about the Maplewood Barn community players to be published in a celebration of our new home and our 40th anniversary season. It will contain a lot of photos of past shows, costumes, and programs. Unfortunately, we lost a lot of our archives in the fire that destroyed the original historic barn a couple of years ago. If you have any memories or materials to share, we'd like your help. For details, check out our website. It's maplewoodbarn.com. And now, back to our story.
But in truth, Jeffrey's mind was not entirely at ease. If by chance the story were true, how could he sit by enjoying the fire? It had been confirmed in the paper that there was a woman connected with these robberies in some way. Jeffrey's sense of chivalry was aroused by the sound of the storm. He rose suddenly to his feet.
I'll go. But before I go, I'll fix it so that if I don't come back, you'll starve to death before you escape. On these terms, do you still want me to go?
Oh, yes. I want you to go. Only, for goodness sake, be careful. If you should feel any temptation to stop moving, don't yield to it. They say it's fatal. The best thing is to keep on walking and...
Oh, shut up. The last thing I need is your friendly advice. This hut, I take it, is the old woodcutter's shanty in the woods?
Yes, something over a mile north of here.
I remember the place. Now come along, and I'll find some way to ensure that you will still be here when I get back. Here. This closet should do the trick. It should not be too cramped.
and this solid oak door is impenetrable.
That should do nicely. Thank you.
There, that will hold him until I return. Yes, what is it?
By the way, my sister has no idea about... It would be a great shock to her if she has not discovered exactly how I make our money or how I acquire goods.
Do you expect me to believe that?
I grant it does not sound likely, and indeed would be improbable with any man other than myself. But I made up a good story. I told her that...
I don't want to hear your infernal lies.
But it might be best if you knew. I told her that I was employed as night watchman at Drake's paper mill. That was my justification for staying out all night. And
she must think night watchmen get good wages.
And therein lies the real genius of my story. I told her Drake was an old friend of mine and just wanted an excuse to give me an allowance until he found me a better job. You see, I just lost a nice bank job.
Would it be indiscreet for me to ask why you were dismissed?
Well, we need not discuss that. It is not important. I convinced her that the night watchman position was a lowly one, which necessitated our remote lifestyle, and was the reason why no one could be allowed to visit us. So, if you have to explain why I am detained here...
Just what do you expect me to tell her?
Why, you're a creative fellow. Please, I would rather you tell her than to have to do it myself. But break it to her as gently as possible. If she were your own sister,
oh,
you...
go to the devil.
Jeffrey was born with a love of adventure and did not fear a trek in deep snow. The first glimmers of dawn were visible as he stepped from the house. The wind blew fiercely and the snow was still falling. To make headway against the wind and snowdrifts was a constant struggle. After some time and great effort, the little hut came into view. Drawing his revolver, Jeffrey approached cautiously. Approaching the door, he gave a mighty shove, and it came completely off its hinges. As Jeffrey surveyed the dilapidated room, something stirred in the corner. He swung the revolver in that direction and was astounded by the most beautiful, enchanting face he had ever seen. Jeffrey slipped the gun back into his coat, and a feeling of protectiveness overtook him.
Good God! What a night you have had!
Oh, it has been a dreadful night, but it is nobody's fault.
Of course it is somebody's fault. Mine! I sat all night with my feet by the fire, while you...
Oh, you are most kind, but I'm afraid there's nothing to be done.
Nothing to be done? I am here to rescue you. In every gust, I heard the wind saying, "Poor girl, poor girl." But I had no idea I would find you here.
What do you mean by that?
Now that I have found you, it seems that my entire life has been directed towards this moment. It is a strange sensation, but I feel that I have found the true purpose of my life.
Well, you are most gracious. I have been freezing all night.
Yes, of course. If you feel capable, we must leave immediately. We are going to my house, and it is warm there.
I can't do that. I must wait for my brother. He is out in this storm, and if he comes back and finds me gone...
Oh, your brother. Yes, well, he's at my house already. He sent me for you.
I see. Then my plight was not revealed to you in a vision?
The vision is standing before me now.
So you took poor Billy in?
Well, in a sense...
Very well. In that case, we'll go at once. Is it far?
Not very, but it is going to be hard work. May I help you remove the blankets you're wrapped up in? They may impede our progress.
Thank you. What are you looking at so intently?
The coat you are wearing. I think it is my sable, isn't it?
Yes, I believe it is.
Well, it looks nice and like a warm coat.
Yes, without it I would have frozen last night. It saved my life.
Thank goodness you had it then.
But if Billy is all right, why didn't he come for me himself?
He had been out in the storm already. I felt it was my turn.
He is really safe at your house then?
I hope so. I did my best under the circumstances.
Oh, you have been very kind to a stranger. I admire your compassionate nature.
Well, he was not exactly a stranger to me. We were at school together.
Oh, another of Billy's friends. I never knew such a person for finding friends at the most opportune times.
I was not in the house at the time, and seeing the place was deserted, he let himself in. Then, when I showed up, we recognized each other, and I would not let him go.
Well, it was a frightful night. And what a wonderful coincidence that it was the house of an old school companion.
Yes, a strange coincidence indeed. It is doubly strange when one considers it is Christmas.
Oh, is it Christmas? I had totally lost track of the days.
Yes, and let me be the first to wish you a very Merry Christmas. By the way, my name is Jeffrey.
And the same to you, my gallant friend. I am Cecilia.
Well, we ought to be going, if you feel strong enough.
I hate to leave all these nice things. Billy is so fond of them. There is some wine that someone gave him that he says is really priceless.
Leave it.
But if I leave it, it may get stolen.
I ask you as a favor to leave it behind. The trip will be difficult enough without carrying extra items.
All right, if you say so.
And with that, they set out for Jeffrey's house. It was a difficult trek through the snowdrifts with the wind blowing into their faces. She showed such determination. Her spirit gave Jeffrey something to admire besides her beauty. During the latter part of the journey, however, her strength began to wane, and he bore her weight gladly, thankful for the opportunity to hold her close. At long last, the house appeared before them, and he took her directly to the library and laid her on the sofa. He quickly restarted the fire, and when he turned to look at her again, she was sleeping like a child. The sight reminded him of his own weariness, and without a thought about whether McVeigh had escaped or was even still locked in the closet, he stretched himself on the hearth rug and was soon dreaming about the most precious and exquisite treasure he could possibly imagine. Here we must leave them, sleeping peacefully by the fire on Christmas Eve, uncertain as to the whereabouts of or fate of that burglar, Billy McVeigh. We hope you will join us next week for the conclusion of Alice Dora Miller's The Burglar in the Blizzard, adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Our producer is Darren Helwick. Our cast featured David Black as Holland, Rita Maloney as Cecilia, and Brad Buchanan as the burglar. Also appearing were Darren Helwig as a waiter, Lee Wilkins as Mrs. Vaughn, Terry Yates as Mr. Vaughn, and Barb Buchanan as Mrs. May. This is your host, Byron Scott, hoping you'll join us again next week at this time on KBIA for the conclusion of this special holiday story. Happy holidays from Maplewood Barn Theater and our whole cast.